We're on the record. I'm Sheila Cass. Good morning. More than 106,000 people are waiting for organ transplants in the U.S., according to the United Network for Organ Sharing. In Maryland, the waitlist holds approximately 2,500 candidates. Each donor has the potential to save up to 8 lives when donating organs, and up to 75 lives through tissue donation. And beginning last July, that little heart at the bottom of your Maryland driver's license that indicates you're an organ donor gives you more options. Before, organs could only be used for transplantation or treatment. Now, Maryland residents can choose whether their organs will be used for research and education or for transplantation and therapy. But there's still a learning curve around the changed law. So we're revisiting our conversation to dispel some myths about organ donation with Aisha Johnson, Director of Community Outreach for Infinite Legacy, formerly the Living Legacy Foundation of Maryland. Johnson also serves on the Donate Life Advisory Council of Donate Life America and is the president-elect of the Association of Multicultural Affairs in Transplantation. I asked her first to tell us what the Living Legacy Foundation is.
The Living Legacy Foundation of Maryland is the organ procurement organization for the state of Maryland, excluding Prince George's, Charles, and Montgomery counties. We are the facilitators of organ donation and transplantation for our area. So I like to call us the bridge. We are the bridge of making sure that our potential donor families have the option to save a life through transplant. And we're also that bridge to get the wait list down and making sure that everyone gets their possible transplant.
You have led a program at the Legacy Foundation called the Decision Project. How did that start?
It actually started back in 2016. I was a recent new manager with our department, even though I've been here for 12 years. When my team started to do outreach, I realized that we were waiting for organizations to reach out to us to educate about donation, or waiting for that phone call from a high school to do a class. And I thought there was something else that we can do to do outreach in Baltimore, just because a lot of our organ donors come from Baltimore City and Baltimore County, which has a high population of Black people and underserved and marginalized groups. So what we did, we actually pulled our donor registration data, and that is how many people are registering to be organ donors at the MVA or online. And we pulled this information for every zip code in the areas we serve. And what we found out that there was a small population in Baltimore City, which is known as Park Heights. Their zip code is 21215. They actually had the lowest donor designation rate, which was about 9% of that population becoming organ donors. And then we also found out by pulling the waitlist data that we get from the United Network of Organ Sharing, we pulled up that list by zip code and ironically found out that there were over 70 people in 21215 waiting for a life-saving transplant. And although that number seems small, it still was big, because when you broke it down per zip code, 72 was the highest. So that was the catalyst for us to say, okay, something is wrong. There's this population in Baltimore City that are not registered organ donors. However, they need an organ the most. And that's where the Decision Project started.
And what exactly is the Decision Project? What do you do?
We educate and empower residents to make an informed decision about organ donation through grassroots outreach. So instead of having a table at an event with prizes and giveaways and a registration form to talk about donation and then say, hey, would you like to be an organ donor? We actually took a step back and said, what is happening in this community that they are going, you know, what are they going through? What needs do they have? And by being involved and doing that grassroots knock on the door, hey, my name is Aisha, I'm with the Living Legacy Foundation of Maryland, what can we do for you approach? We found out that this area had low-income residents. About half the population in that area had a high school diploma, lots of single-family homes, food insecurities, higher crime, a lot of factors that wouldn't play into effect about thinking about organ donation. So we decided to say, hey, we're here. What do you need? And we started giving back. So the first things we started to do was help send off some of the youth to different camps. The food insecurities was a big deal. So we got a grant with the Maryland Food Bank. So anytime that there's a need, we can call up our contact and say, we would like to do this event in Park Heights. Can you send over produce? They'll bring it to us anytime. We built a strong relationship with Pastor Terry Moore at the Northwest Faith-Based Partnership, where we participate in Safe Streets, National Night of Prayer, all of these events happening in Park Heights, so we can start building that trust.
And so that's what I want to understand. The point is to build trust because?
Because a lot of just people in general in this area have a high level of mistrust with the medical system. Just some of the things that happened throughout the years, even in our own backyard with Henrietta Lacks, those things still come up when we're doing outreach, especially in the Black population. So we wanted to make sure that they knew that the Living Legacy Foundation of Maryland was here for them. A lot of our approach was never bringing out a registration form to say, hey, you should be an organ donor. And this is why. A lot of it was just embedding ourselves in their community and being a face, because we were told through focus groups in that community that people come in and take and leave. And that's one thing we didn't want to do.
When do you actually talk about organ donation?
When we start having a face-to-face meaningful conversation. I remember being at a food drop about 2 years ago, and we had our Decision Project shirts on. We had some of our Donate Life ambassadors out. We were passing out food, and a woman came up to me and was like, who are you? What's this about? And we had a genuine conversation about who we were, what we did. And that's how we have those conversations. And if they want to learn more, then we go and pass out a brochure. But we didn't want to be someone coming in or commuting like, you should be an organ donor. We wanted to make sure we were building relationships first.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with Aisha Johnson, Director of Community Outreach for Infinite Legacy. We're talking about the myths and the realities of organ donation. So what do you hear from people who attend your informational programs? What questions do they have?
A lot of questions derive from some of the myths and misconceptions about donations. So one of the ones that we get a lot that we were always probably dispelled because it's when television doesn't help sometimes, but a lot of people feel that if the hospital finds out they're organ donor or they have a heart on their driver's license, that the hospital won't save their life because they're going to be looking to recover organs. And that is not true. Our hospitals and the nursing and physician staff, their first job is to take care of their patient. Another myth that we get is that they're too old or sick. We do hear people say, well, my doctor said I had diabetes, so I can't be an organ donor. That is also not true. We determine at the time of a person's death what organs are viable. So we always say, please don't rule yourself out. Think about it. You know, don't think about that now because you can probably give a gift that you never thought you can give. And then another one is that they think that they have to pay for donation-related expenses. Families do not have to pay for a loved one becoming an organ donor. That is 100% paid by the transplant recipient's insurance or the OPO paying for the OR time at our hospitals.
So with all this time and effort you've invested in the Decision Project, what kind of results have you seen?
So after a five-year trend, going from that 9% of the population in 21215, registrations increased in 2019 by 500%. And then another success that we saw, that authorization rates, and authorization rates means when someone's in the hospital and we ask if they would like their loved one to be an organ donor, and the family can say yes or no, That was 45% in 2016, and then that jumped to 71% in 2019. So we do see some success. And for me, success is just having those relationships and those conversations and our community leaders calling on us first.
What is it about racial disparity and organ donation? I mean, can't organs be donated to and from anyone as long as the organ is a match for what the recipient needs?
Yes. However, it's always going to be a better outcome, especially if there's someone that is a person of color or a Black individual on the transplant wait list. If they were to get a kidney per se from a Black donor, the chances for higher success rate is high. However, organs do not have any color. Anyone can donate and the organ go to anyone. But there is research that shows that receiving a transplant from the same race does have a better outcome.
What do you most want listeners to understand about your work with the Living Legacy Foundation?
What I would like everyone to understand is that, you know, deciding to be a registered donor and tissue donor can simultaneously is the easiest and the hardest decision that we will ever have to make. And we understand that it's difficult to think about death. But one thing that I want everyone to take away that the act of registering as a donor, it's about the decision you make after you pass away. And it's a decision that you get to think about impacting and saving the life of someone else. And at the end of the day, what can be better than that? Whether you're an organ donor or you're not, the fact that you made that decision is all that we ask for.
Aisha, thank you.
Thank you, Sheila.
Aisha Johnson is the Director of Community Outreach for Infinite Legacy, formerly the Living Legacy Foundation of Maryland. We've been talking about the process to become a tissue and organ donor and the new option available when choosing to donate. Infinite Legacy will be participating in the Be More Healthy Expo on March 25th at the Baltimore Convention Center. We've got information at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Quick break on the record. When we're back, we'll meet an organ transplant recipient and hear about her process and why she's dedicated to giving back. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Today, we're revisiting our conversation about organ donation. Next month is National Donate Life Month. We heard about Infinite Legacy and learned some of the truths and myths about making the decision to donate. Now we hear from Danette Reagan, a volunteer with Infinite Legacy, formerly Living Legacy Foundation. She's also a donor recipient and the relative of deceased organ donors. I asked about her experience when she received an organ donation.
Well, unfortunately, due to high blood pressure and protein being spilled in my urine over the years, I was told that my kidneys had started to fail in 2002. And they were watched very closely until the doctor said, finally, we're going to have to probably put you on a list for a kidney transplant.
Well, and you did what then when you got that news from your doctor?
I'm going to give you just a tiny bit of my story. I was going through a lot of anxiety with my family. A lot of people were getting sick all at one time. And this particular day, I had an appointment to see my nephrologist, and I remember driving to him and I heard a voice say, stop. And I was looking around in my car like, I'm the only person in here. But I heard it again say, stop.
Wow.
And I picked up my phone and I called my husband and I said, honey, I think the Lord just told me to stop. Stop being overbeared with everybody else's stuff and deal with mine. He said, well, if he told you to do so, then you do so. So when I went to see my nephrologist, he said, Ms. Reagan, I have some good news and bad news. And he says, what do you want first? I said, it doesn't matter. News is news at this point. So he said, well, The bad news is that your creatinine has started to rise really high. The good news is you can be placed on the transplant list. So from there, we chose a hospital, one of the local hospitals here in Maryland. And we from there, we went to the transplant center, who had us to do an abundance of tests. They gave us 6 weeks to do those tests. I completed all the tests in two, so they knew I was determined. You had to spend all day long at this center from, I would say, 8:30 until 4. You weren't allowed to leave. Someone could go and bring you lunch, but they had so many doctors you had to see. You had to get your blood work drawn. You had EKGs. You had all these other tests that you had to perform, and you had classes that you had to attend.
How long did you wait for an organ?
I went down and was approved in 2007. I received my first call in 2008, in January. Well, the first call, they wouldn't use the kidneys because both were cystic. The second call I received on Easter Sunday, 2008. And she said, "If we'll call you back by the morning. If not, then it was between Hopkins and University. If Hopkins has a turn and they don't use it, then they send it over to University. If University has a turn and they don't use it, they send it over to Hopkins." So this particular time, Hopkins had accepted the kidney, and I was like, okay, my family was devastated. And I said, it's not for me. If it was for me, it's my turn, I would get it. So June 22nd, 2008, I received that call while in a crowded mall with my daughter, because she was a National American Miss, a junior National American Miss finalist. We were buying some outfits for her, and my phone vibrated, and I didn't hear it ring, but I looked down and I saw the number 2 University. So I went out to the hall and I heard the young lady say, "We have an organ offer for you." So I went down, they did the blood work, they did the testing on me, and they said, "You can go home. We'll call you when everything is ready." And I said, okay. So my daughter and I went over to famous Lexington Market, had a little lunch, and we were on our way home. And I said, "I probably should not have eaten. Let me call this lady and see what's going on." And she said, "We were just picking up the phone to call you because they're waiting for you." Wow. And everything just started snowballing at that time. And I called my husband and I said, "They want me down to University now." And he said, "Okay, I'm coming home." I had everything laid out. Honey Boy came in and he started feeding the fish and he started feeding the bird. And I was like, "They can wait till we come back." So we went down to University and they did. I mean, again, it snowballed because they came running in the room and I looked around like, "What's going on?" It was like, "We have to get your EKG real fast because they're waiting for you in the OR." This is how fast it went. When I woke up, it was like 2:00 the next morning, and the nurse was beside my bed, and she was like, She said, "Something doesn't seem right, but you look good." And I said, "Thank you." And she took the biggest syringe I ever seen in my life, and she put it inside of my catheter, and I heard a little pop. And then I seen her go back in and empty out the rest of the syringe. And when she turned around, she said, "Oh my God, that kidney is working very well because it's full already." So she emptied it. And after she emptied it, she had to empty it a second time. So I knew it was working well.
And that transplant has been successful?
In 2016, my doctor told me that my transplant was starting to decrease in function because my donor was older than I am. And it was running its course. So I went to the transplant games in 2016. And when I came back, I informed my family to let them know that I was going to have a second transplant. And both my daughters and one of my godsons said they wanted to go down and be tested. And they all matched. So at that point, we had to pick out who was going to be the one to actually go through the process first. My youngest daughter, who was also my caretaker during my first transplant along with my husband, said, "I don't care who matches, I'm going to do this." She matched all the way through. So she gave me a kidney on December the 20th, 2016. And little Angel is doing perfect. She's really working.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking with organ transplant recipient and Infinite Legacy volunteer Danette Regan. We spoke last summer about her experience receiving a transplant and educating others about organ donation. You were involved in helping another family member become a donor. Tell us about that.
Actually, I wanted to make a correction. I am the aunt of two tissue and cornea donors, and my uncle was an honorary donor. My daughter is the living donor who gave me my kidney. I do have a distant family member. She asked a lot of questions in regard to organ donation, and she received her kidney last year. Also, my niece's father, one of his family, grandfather, one of his family members donated a kidney to him too. So when the family member, friend, stranger, whomever, when they call me to ask questions in regards to organ donation, I give them as much information that I can. If I can't answer their questions, I try to find out a way that I can point them in the right direction.
Why is it so important for you to facilitate that process?
Because I know how it was for me to wait, wondering, and I may get a little deep, but every time I just wonder, am I going to die? I didn't want to be on dialysis for the rest of my life. I was also a dialysis tech in my early 20s. And I saw what went on in those dialysis centers. Not saying that everything was bad, but I saw how sick sometimes the individuals had gotten. And I didn't want to be like that. So in order for me to get this transplant, I want to make sure that other people know too. You know, even those individuals who are probably on dialysis as we speak, you know, there is a chance if you're compliant on receiving an organ transplant. And then there are some things that are underlying conditions that won't allow you to receive an organ transplant.
I understand that later this month you plan to participate in the Transplant Games of America in San Diego. Tell us about that.
I am so excited because I have met so many people through Facebook, through the Transplant Games website, that are like family to me. We don't see each other, but we talk to each other a lot on Facebook. And when we do see each other, it's like a family reunion. It's not so much for a competition for me. It's more so just having fun with people who I know who are out there and went through the same things or similar to what I'm going through.
What do you most want people to understand if they're on the fence about becoming an organ donor?
You know, you can change and enhance anyone's life. And until the shoe is on the other foot, you really probably won't know the true significance of it. But if you have any reservations, I pray that my testimonial will help you to come to a decision to at least try to help someone. They have a lot of programs out there. One of the biggest ones is the exchange program. The program where if you can't donate directly to an individual that you're signed to donate to, you can go along with several other people and you can donate whatever to another person. And then that person will be able to get one from a match that's coming down the line. Did that make sense?
It does make sense. And I'm really grateful to you for talking to us. Thank you, Danette.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Danette Regan volunteers with Infinite Legacy, formerly the Living Legacy Foundation of Maryland. We revisited the conversation with her from July about her experience as an organ transplant recipient and educating others about the choice of organ donation. We've got more information at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow.